Good morning and welcome for the second day of the SDG4 seminar. And this morning we have our second keynote for the conference. And I have pleasure to invite Chang Heng, who is an associate professor at the Policy, Curriculum and Leadership Academic Group in the National Institute of Education within the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. She completed her PhD in curriculum instruction and teacher education at the Michigan State University. Her empirical research is situated at the intersection between educational theories, practices, and policies of teacher professional learning for educational quality and equity with a comparative and international perspective. She has been awarded a NTU edX teaching grant, which I had pleasure to work with her on this grant. And the presentation will be about our own professional learning as teacher educators. She currently serves also as an associate editor for the Asia Pacific Journal of Education and council member of the World Association of Lesson Studies. Welcome, Chang Heng.
Thank you so much, Heidi. Good morning. I'm Jiang Heng, as Heidi kindly introduced. I worked in Singapore, National Institute of Education, for the past 12 years. But I'm originally from China. I was brought up there and educated there. And then after that, I was educated and working in Michigan, the United States. So that's my background, and that's kind of relevant to today's presentation. And as a educational ethnographer, one of my favorite story was told by American novelist David Wallace Foster. At one of his speech to the graduates in the Kenyon College, and well, he told the story. There are two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way, who nods at them, "Hey, how's water?" And then the two young fish swim on for a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over to the other and he goes, "What is water?" I'm telling the story, not suggesting that I'm an old wise fish. This fish story actually suggested that sometimes the most important and obvious realities may be the hardest to notice and talk about. And those questions about what's water and how's water drives my passion to conduct research in education as an endeavor to know more about the world and more about myself and help and work with teacher educators and teachers in international contexts. And these questions also lay foundations for our intercultural collaborations on this lesson study projects for teacher educators' professional growth. So Heidi, everybody knows her here, and kindly agreed to work with me to conduct this intercultural blended lesson study, which is kind of both online and face-to-face lesson study project, to see how lesson study could have the educational potentials to help teacher educators to grow professionally and sustain teacher professional development, even when lesson study projects stopped. Yesterday, we listened to Durbin's keynote. So he warned us that we have to have our own definition of interculturality. But I kind of borrow his definition, and I really like his way to term interculturality as a way to pose questions and to challenge the status quo, and then to really think about who we are by encountering the other. And this idea of interculturality actually mirrors the idea of culture by the anthropologist Anderson Lavitt, saying that culture is not script. It's not fixed meaning for people to apply. Rather, culture is a meaning-making process. It's evolving and it's emerging in interactions among people from different backgrounds. So this perspective of culture as a meaning-making process really helped Heidi and I to conceptualize the study as a dialogic process. And we bring in our cultural understandings to investigate how we can collaboratively scrutinize the lesson we designed, co-designed, and observed in the cycle of lesson study. I will introduce lesson study a little bit later, but this just lays the background. With this idea of understanding culture as a meaning-making process, I don't want to essentialize the culture that Heidi and I embody with. And I'm also Chinese, so I can only share my understanding of what culture in Singapore context from my perspective. So this is all of interpreting what we have been thinking and experiencing and conversing about. In terms of the cultural context in Singapore and in Finland, they are similar in some way, and they're also different. So both countries are high-performing educational, have the high-performing educational systems. And both countries were colonized before, and they also put a lot of emphasis on education. Although Singapore educational system is more centralized and putting a focus on this performative culture, which means that it's very examination oriented and students were prepared to achieve high in examinations. Whereas in Finland is more egalitarian oriented educational system, and trust is important. And then I understand that you have a lot of trust in educational system as well as in individual teachers and schools. Well, researchers also said that trust exists in Singapore context, although it's very efficiency driven. But that trust is a little bit different. It's not relying on individual persons, but it's on the system. The government. So they trust this government is very good and they can make good decisions. And the whole institution could really support individual development. So different kind of trusting culture there. And these social cultural differences in our respective culture backgrounds were manifested or operationalized in the process of co-working on the lessons we design in a graduate program in National Institute of Education, which is the sole teacher training institution in Singapore. And this social culture differences in terms of different understanding of content and different understanding of how to bring content to students and then different understanding of teaching, the nature of teaching and pedagogy could be conceptualized in terms of this boundary. So boundaries mark the difference between people or between groups, and even within ourselves, we have different kind of understanding, sometimes clashing, sometimes conjoining. So this boundary crossing theory is quite established in the past 20 years, talking about how we can really notice the differences in our thinking when we encounter with cultural others. And we employ this metaphor of boundary to see how we could negotiate these differences and transform our understanding when we try to cross the boundaries to understand others' perspective. So perspective making and perspective taking is the process of this boundary making, boundary crossing process. And teacher professional learning was long termed as kind of acquisition, acquiring certain knowledge and skills. But after the theory of community of practice by Levin Wenger was published, people start to conceptualize teacher professional learning as participation. So novice teachers participate in the community of practice and then pick up the skills by observing the more experienced teachers or their mentors, and then start to pick up the more important tasks to teach. It's like a gradual ease into the phase of teaching practicum in Singapore. I guess you have similar arrangements in Finland as well. This boundary crossing offers a different perspective on teacher professional learning, which means that learning for teachers are not just about acquiring knowledge and skills that's already there, or participating in the community practice, just learning or shadowing the more experienced teachers, which is more or less kind of reproducing what's already there. the culture in the school, and then the script of teaching, the routine of teaching were kind of reproduced in that manner. And then the boundary crossing process offers a different perspective on teacher learning as expansive learning. We start to be curious about, okay, so there's something not there. How can we learn something not there? How can we learn something now for the future? And this kind of expansive learning is really fascinating to me. So I tried to use this boundary crossing process to see how I can learn from Haiti and how we can generate something new, which is surprising and nice and sometimes painful. It's challenging as well. And learning, if we consider this expansive learning at the boundary, theorists or education researchers have found out there are several learning mechanisms can support this expansive learning, such as identifying the difference, the boundary, so marking the boundary. So what's different? We start to know, okay, I'm different because I really pay attention to the accuracy of the definition of the concepts. For instance, and Heidi would say, okay, probably we should start with students' experiences first, and then to see what they can offer, and then we can tie into the concepts. So those are identification of the boundaries at the start of the learning. And then coordination. Once we identify the differences, how can we really make sense of these differences in the real context of classrooms? When we have responses from students, and then we look at students' work, how can we really modify our teaching in light of different perspectives, and then adjust our teaching to serve students' needs. Then in this process of implementing lesson study with co-designing and observing, we also reflect a lot on how we could really understand each other, understand our students, and understand the nature about teaching and teacher professional learning. After reflection, this learning at the boundaries offer a fourth learning mechanism, that is the audacity or the courage to transform our own practices. We're not going back to the original ways of teaching. Say, okay, we just shy away from this new ways of thinking. But after we converse, after we dialogue, sometimes we debated, then our ideas, our perspectives and practices were modified and changed. So these are the learning mechanisms at boundaries. So now comes to the backgrounds of how we can apply this or can use boundary crossing theory to guide our lesson study projects in an intercultural context. So lesson study was borrowed by Singapore educational system in 2005 in the context of educational reforms. In Singapore, it's, as I said, it's examination-oriented centralized system. And there is a primary school leaving examination, which is very important for the sixth graders. They have to achieve high to get a very good middle school. And then they also have O-level and A-level examinations. But Singapore Ministry of Education found out that, it's really limiting and the students are not happy, and then they hope that students could be more creative, innovative, and then could enjoy learning. So from 2000, so this learning less, learn more, teach less, learn more, sorry, teach less, learn more was one of the initiatives to really suggest the innovative teaching methods to engage students in learning, not just for preparation for examinations, but really enjoy learning. And then in 2020, this slogan of joy for learning and then now life for learning, or suggest that Singapore wants to move away from this examination-driven, performativity-driven educational system to more student-centered, creativity and criticality-oriented education. How to do it? Researchers have found out that teachers mainly conduct the frontal teaching, and even after the reform has been pushed after about 10 years, the researchers found out that in 2014, they found that teachers are using hybrid pedagogy, which means that it's the teacher-centered lecturers are dominating the classroom with a weaker focus on constructivist approach to teaching. And then Ministry of Education installed this policy on the professional learning community to support teachers, to guide them to seek for excellence in their professional development and their professional practices, with the aim to incorporating new pedagogies to help students to learn and enjoy learning. And that's where lesson study was imported from Japan as one of the forms of professional learning community. So what's lesson study? Lesson study, or Jugu Kenku in Japanese, or Keli Yanjiu in Chinese, first were found out, were discovered by a group of American educational researchers, Stigler and Hebert, when they tried to conduct the studies on the TIMSS, the results of TIMSS, the third international trained of mathematics and science. They were trying to figure out why Japanese students achieve so high. And then they found out that this lesson study really plays an important role for teachers to scrutinize their teaching and improve their teaching. But lesson study is also taking a lot of forms in East Asia, in mainland China, in Hong Kong, they're taking different forms. Basically, it's a cycle of teacher collaboration. So teachers would study what's needed by examining students' work and then the curriculum materials, and then to co-plan the lesson. And then this co-planned lesson is termed as research lesson because they're going to conduct research on this lesson and how to teach this lesson. Then they're going to observe the conduction or implementation of the research lesson and taking notes and then observe students. They're not observing teachers, they're observing students, how students receive this research lesson. And then they would provide the notes, the observers would provide the notes to the instructors during the post-lesson discussion session. And then the teacher who conducted the research lesson would have the discussion with those observers and then to see whether the lesson was going well, and then whether the objectives were achieved and how to improve it, and whether students have really learned what's supposed to learn or even learn something new. And then after this discussion, they would think about how they would develop a plan to reteach the lesson. Sometimes reteaching is not a required option. Sometimes just teachers don't reteach, but this discussion about the research lesson would help them to not just examine how lesson went, but also examine how they interpreted student learning. The interpretation is very important because we are all victims of attribution error. When we observe something, we immediately jump into conclusion interpretations. But lesson study offers the space between our judgments of student learning and the alternative interpretations offered by multiple observers in the classroom. And the photo on the above was taken in a Singapore primary school when I conducted the field work with them. And the photo at the bottom was a Japanese research lesson. You can see that the observers were walking about and observed students' work and need to be faster. Okay. The origin of two types of lesson study in East Asia. You can see that it has been there for over 100 years and has very deep roots in the philosophies and even mingled with the philosophies borrowed from the West. The educational philosophies by Pestalozzi, by Froebel, and even Dewey influenced the Japanese education, which really helped them to come up with lesson study as a cycle for teacher professional development. And in China, the philosophy of Wang Yangming really helped people to think about the unity of knowledge and practice. If you cannot really practice something, it means you don't know it. So it's the harmony and the unity of knowing and practice, which lays the foundation for using lesson study to see the practice of nexus between what we know and what we do. In Singapore, more than Around, more than half of the school implemented lesson study, and then many of them suggested that they would want to continue. But that data was a little bit dated. It was from my first lesson study with my colleagues. So we're about to have another round of a national survey on the lesson study to see what's going on. But in my later on, I have a smaller scale of research projects on lesson study from 2014 to 2017. I found out that the schools did not really continue lesson study once the funds were over, but their professional learning continued. And when I talked with them after the project was over, and then I revisited them, and they said that, okay, what we have learned from lesson study helped us to revise our current professional learning community activities. Although we don't continue with lesson study, professional learning continues. So that triggered my curiosity. So what makes lesson study a trigger for continued professional development? Even the form of lesson study stopped. And then how to sustain? That means how to sustain the teacher professional learning, right? The sustainability of teacher education. And that's why I, or how, one of the reasons that I worked with Haiti to study ourselves. When I advocate something for others, to others, it doesn't make sense to me if I don't practice it myself. So I have this self-study with Haiti to see whether we could incorporate lesson study in a teacher education course to study how we could use each other's perspective to foster the teacher educator's professional growth. So these are the two questions that guide our investigation. What are the experiences of teacher educators engaged in a blended intercultural lesson study to use classroom assessment for making graduate students thinking visible? We use classroom assessment because we found that we need to have evidence for our discussions. So we need classroom assessment to gather data from our observation of students' performance or their work to support our kind of claims when we debated. And then the second question was, what have we, teacher educators, learned from the experiences of the blended intercultural lesson study with the classroom assessment? This is the cycle that we came up with, combining the lesson study cycle and the classroom cycle in the blended learning environment, and was recently published as a book chapter in the book that I co-edited with a group of international scholars on blended and online lesson study. So this lesson study is situated in this graduate course titled Understanding Teachers and Teaching. I designed this course and hoping to have students who are in-service teachers from many countries and from different layers of educational institutions. And I want them to kind of make use of the theoretical lenses as tools to re-examine their understanding of teaching, nature of teaching, how we understand teachers, and how we understand the possibilities imbued in different kind of professional learning opportunities. So this course has three objectives listed here. So I really want to, basically it's about helping teachers to see connections between theories about teachers and teaching and teacher professional learning and their experiences. But I face challenges. And I have students from India, United States, United Kingdom, and China, and of course, Singapore. And then students are teaching different subjects and at different levels. They are from ITU, which is a kind of secondary it's a university level, right? Tertiary education level, and then a secondary school and primary school and even early childhood education center. So they're very diverse. And how can we make those theory clicks, right? When they think about their own very different experiences in their professional practices. And they also tell me that, well, these are all from the Europe or American educational researchers. And how does their voice speak to my experiences? And I had applied it to this grant and then asked Heidi to help me to say, okay, how can we really make those students from diverse backgrounds to understand the theories and then make those theories really help them to rethink their own professional experiences? And then Haiti By then, you worked there in National Institute of Education in Singapore. So we had this grant, and then we planned really co-observe each other's lesson. But when COVID started, Haiti had to come back to Finland. So we moved it online. So it became a blended lesson study, which is quite new in the field of lesson study as well, because lesson study requires face-to-face interactions and observations. It installs a lot of opportunities as well as challenges. We had this project over the span of 2 semesters, and each semester has 13 weeks. And we have weekly lessons for 3 hours. That's a lot of time. And then we observe each other and then videotaped our lessons. And then we collected students' work. And then we have post-lesson discussions for 2 hours. This kind of link between the post-lesson discussion and pre-lesson planning for the next lesson. We also have our reflections. So those are kind of multitude of our data to understand how we can learn from this process. So this is the photo, and we really, Haiti and one of our teaching assistants are online, and I was teaching, and then the upper corner is featuring the classroom. Okay, sorry, my voice is very soft. So what have you found? We found out that it's not just about learning from each other. It's also about interrupting what we have believed in and what we have practiced as routines. And we have been very comfortable talking to each other and very honest about what we believe in. So very quickly, we identified this tension between the priority on the content versus the priority on students. Sorry. Okay. So that's kind of describing one of the findings, that is interrupting our habits of thinking and doing with exposure differences. So I will show you the one small set of data. So on the one hand, I wanted to scrutinize reading materials. And I said, I found that I tend to focus on the reading. But Haiti, you expand the text to include students' experiences, right? And Haiti said, yes, the pedagogy should be linking students with the content. How to bring the content to students' life? How to help students to make sense of the content via their own experiences? And we have this lingering kind of contradictions, but we didn't really let it go. We didn't just brush it off. And we didn't really achieve some agreement at this time, because this kind of critical instance come back again and again. So critical instance means that some kind of phenomenon or event keeps coming that really shows the tension or disruptions or disagreement, which helps us to think about meaning in this process. So we are interrupting what we have believed in, and we have this kind of process of suspensing, which means that we are not quick to jump into conclusion about what should be done. So we are trying to figure out why we have this kind of difference. What are the resources for us to figure out how to make sense of these differences and then deal with it? So Heidi make use of didactic analysis, the traditional didactic analysis, to try to share her perspective. And she said that, well, we really have to see what students are saying, and then to see how we could make connections between what they say and then the parts of the concepts. So they could scaffold it and then nudged towards the concept, the understanding of the concept. And for me, being brought up in East Asia and then later studied in the US, I was kind of oscillated between giving a teacher version definition of the concept and having students, inviting students to share their stories. So I was not sure what to do. And I think that Haiti have a very good point, but when I listened to students, one of the students said, well, I really don't want to listen to stories. I just want to get the concept. That's a very typical answer from Singaporean students. And Well, do we follow students' kind of needs, quote unquote, or we want to really interrupt their ways of thinking about what is needed in a graduate teacher education course? And we have this discussion trying to see how we could support each other and how can we support students and then to stretch their ways of thinking. And in one lesson, one student, Cherry, posted a question about facilitation, which was critiqued by a scholar, Biesta, Gert Biesta, who was visiting here. And she said, well, facilitation is very, very good. As an early childhood education educator, I've been always doing it. And why? I don't think I disagree with Biesta's point. And then I complimented her critical thinking, but I followed that with a mini lecture on what I understood as facilitation. So I stopped this discussion and then replaced it with my teacher version, more authoritative interpretation of the text. And then this instant came back to the post-lesson discussion, and Heidi said, hey, why don't you just let them to discuss a bit before you tell them what's your understanding of facilitation, this concept? And then I realized, well, yeah, why not having students to bring in their own experience and stories and then to figure out what's their understanding of facilitation. Maybe they have their own interpretation of this concept, which could expand the concept that I understood as facilitation. So that, in a way, helped me to kind of suspend and slow down a little bit before I jump into mini lectures to give students the right answer. Okay. Given this kind of understanding of interrupting and suspending, we kind of developed this flipped classroom to inviting students to comment online on the text so that we know what they think about concepts before, even before they came to the class. And then they can comment on each other's comments, so they have conversations in a community of learning, in a kind of asynchronized way. And then when we plan the lesson, we look at their online postings and they incorporate their understanding in crafting our lessons. And we also invited students to do student facilitation session. So I would speak less and have students to facilitate the discussion to show their understanding of the concept and the text. And then we'll invite more students to jump in and before I could share my understanding. So we modified this lesson a lot, and I hope that I really help the students to learn. But most importantly, I think I benefited from this fourth mechanism of becoming. So I thought that I start not just to think about pedagogies of inviting the students to the content, but also examining who I am as a teacher educator. With my cultural backgrounds, with my educational upbringings, I have my own certain ways of teaching. And then that could be one way, but there could be alternative ways. And if we could really have dialogues with a second pair of eyes in the classroom, paying particular attention to students' work and students' responses, we could make this classroom a more conducive learning environment for all, not just for students, but also for teacher educators. For Heidi, this process is like working in a mirror hall. And she said that she's like a mirror to me. But I think that it's not just about mirroring my thinking. It's a two-way mirror, both transparent and reflective, with certain kind of position. We can see the other person on the other side of the mirror. So this lesson study process, intercultural lesson study process, is like a two-way mirror. I can see Haiti, and I can also see myself as teacher educator. And those were
at the end of the course, we interview students and invite them to reflect on the lesson, provide feedback.
That's my voice.
And the feedback are mainly positive. And students are also very active to provide some feedback on how to improve this blended learning environment.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Okay,
Some students found themselves empowered to share their opinions with their colleagues and find very good conversations and reactions between the readings, the theories, the personal self, reflections, text to self, and global to self. And this was very encouraging.
Okay, so when I practiced it, I actually recorded my voice and I deleted most of it, but I still have this because those are very important. We focus on student learning and those are data from student learning. Of course, there are challenges of conducting this intercultural or blended learning lesson study. We need to find balance between the live interactions and online interaction because Haiti was online and our graduate assistant was also online. And some students have to observe our attended lessons due to the quarantine. And most lessons were conducted face-to-face in Singapore. So we have to coordinate the online and then the on-site environment. It's also difficult to appropriately use synchronous or synchronous activities to promote effective teaching and learning because we have three platforms, the NTU, the Blackboard online platform, and then the Peruso, which offer the interactive annotation for students, and also the Zoom. And it's very time consuming to get all the data from the asynchronous and synchronous platforms. And teacher educators' roles and students have a regulation of their learning has to be carefully navigated. So we have to spend quite some time every week to discuss and observe. And it's also challenging to elicit students' responses in time and tailor teaching to different students because we have weekly discussions and revise our teaching for next week. In light of all these findings, I think that we could kind of modify the theory of a community of practice by Lev and Winger. So they suggested there are three mechanisms to support teacher professional learning, which is kind of the common enterprise, the common goal. But we have sometimes we have very different goals. I focus on content, kind of more teacher frontal, and then Haiti focus more on students. So we can have the conflicts or differences are okay. Those are boundaries, and learning can happen in the boundaries, upon the boundaries. And then they also suggest this mutual engagement. Kind of we mutually engage in a learning environment, and then give each other advices. But I think it's not just about being together. It's also having this in-depth, supportive, reflective discussions based on the data from student learning. And then Lev and Winger also suggested the shared repertoire, shared tools. I think it's something that grown inside as expertise that really speaks to us, really help us to see what's possible in this collaboration. So we use this adaptive collective expertise to replace this kind of shared repertoire. Okay, so I have learned so much from this project, and I think, so there have a lot of points here, but the most important thing I want to highlight is that this intercultural lesson study really helped me, and hopefully for Haiti as well, to develop this inquiry stance. So it's not just about what could be done differently in the classroom. It's not about practice. It's not about moves. It's not even about thinking. It's about how we could embody this disposition to be open to what's possible out there from different cultural backgrounds, from students' voices, from the conversations, from the theories that enlighten us, and from the consequences of our practices. So this is more of a strategy that we developed in conversation with each other and with practice. So, how is water? And what is water for you? Right? The story from Asia and from Finland might sound like a little bit distant to some of you from different parts of the world, but Asia can be a method to expand our intellectuality to see what's possible. And Europe can also be a tool and a method for us to examine who we are as educators and as global citizens for sustainable future. So Thank you, kiddos, for listening.